Memorial, written by Brian Washington and read by Brian Washington and Aki Katabi.
Benson. 1. Mike's taking off for Osaka, but his mother's flying into Houston. Just for a few weeks, he says. Or maybe a couple of months, he says. But I need to go. The first thing I think is, fuck. The second's that we don't have the money for this. Then it occurs to me that we don't have any savings at all. But Mike's always been good about finances, always cool about separating his checks. It's something I'd always taken for granted about him. Now he's saying that he wants to find his father. The man's gotten sick. Mike wants to catch him before he goes. And I'm on the sofa, half listening, half charging my phone. You haven't seen your mom in years, I say. She's coming for you. I've never met her. I say, you don't even fucking like your dad. True, says Mike, but I already bought the ticket. And Ma will be here when I'm back, says Mike. You're great company. She'll live. He's cracking eggs by the stove, slipping yolks into a pair of pans. After they've settled, he salts them, drizzling mayonnaise with a few sprigs of oregano. Mike used to have this thing about sriracha. He'd pull a hernia whenever I reached for it. But now, he squeezes a faded bottle over my omelet, rubbing it in with the spatula. I don't ask where he'll stay in Japan. I don't ask who he'll stay with. I don't ask where his mother will sleep here, in our one-bedroom apartment, or exactly what that arrangement will look like. The thing about a moving train is that, sometimes, you can catch it. Some of the kids I work with, that's how their families make it into this country. If you fall, you're dead. If you're too slow, you're dead. But if you get a running start, it's never entirely gone. So I don't flip the coffee table, or one of our chairs. I don't key his car or ram it straight through the living room. After the black eye, we stopped putting our hands on each other. We'd both figured, silently, it was the least we could do. Today, what I do is smile. I thank Mike for letting me know. I ask him when he's leaving, and I know that's my mistake. I'm already reaching to toss my charger before he says it. Tomorrow. We've been fine. Thank you for asking. Our relationship is, what, 4 years old? But that depends on how you count. We haven't been to a party in months, and when we did go to parties at first, no one knew we were fucking. Mike just stood to the side while whatever white girl talked her way into my space. Then he'd reach up over my shoulder to slip a finger into my beer, or he'd sneeze, stretch, and wipe his nose with my shirt sleeve. Or he'd fondle my wallet, slowly, patting it back into place. Once, at a dinner, right under the table, he held court with a hand in my lap, running his thumb over the crotch. Every now and again, someone would look, and you could tell when they finally saw. They'd straighten their backs, smile a little too wide. Then Mike would ask what was wrong, and they'd promise it was nothing, and he'd go right back to cheesing, never once nodding my way. We knew how he looked and how he didn't look. But one night, a few weeks back, at a bar crawl for Mike's job, all it took was a glance at us. He works at a coffee shop in Montrose. It's this fusion thing where they butcher rice bowls and egg rolls, although really, it's Mexican food, since unless your name is Mike, that's who's cooking. They'd been open for a year. This was their anniversary celebration. Mike volunteered us to help for an hour, flipping tortillas on a burner by the DJ. I felt miserable. Mike felt miserable. Everyone who passed us wore this look that said, mm. They touched our shoulders, asked how long we'd been together, wondered where we'd met, how we'd managed during Harvey, and the music was too fucking loud, so Mike and I just sort of shrugged.